Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our minds for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast number 184, and this week we've got a ton of news because New York Comic Con was just last weekend, and they told a bunch of stuff.
Well, it was rather prolific.
Yeah, it felt like on San Diego Comic Con levels.
Yeah, maybe really, more so.
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure if that was misremembering San Diego.
my buddy Tim Doyle was out there doing karaoke.
Uh-huh.
I was as jealous as I got in New York Comic Con. I didn't want to be on the crowded floor. I just wanted to be doing karaoke in New York, which I can do that here. So.
How about we put a little Statue of Liberty, snow globe thing in there.
I like it.
And then we just do normal karaoke.
I like it. Let's do it.
You squint sometimes and you pretend you're in New York.
Someone says, hey, I'm walking here between.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And then we mug you.
So, reminder, our roundup for the charity for the month is the Puerto Rico-based Hurricane Maria Community Relief and Recovery Fund.
Yep.
Gaming with Rogues is Unearth and Boss Monster coming up on Saturday, October 21st. Halloween Comic Fest is Saturday, October 28th. That'll be lots of free comics, bunch of good stuff, plus some stuff from the last few years. And then that night will also be Ladies Night, Spoopy Edition.
Yes.
Where did Spoopy come from?
I'm going to say Tumblr, but I feel like the internet. It's actually a handy word.
I don't know if you guys can... So, I don't know if you guys can hear that, but it's like every car alarm in the parking lot is going off right now. And there we go.
Do we feel like, I was like, is Armageddon, has it come?
I was just wondering, yeah, it's like this is going to be our last broadcast, which we're not broadcasting live, so.
God, if the Herald of Armageddon is two car alarms going off, that's kind of
That's how it starts, Nick, very small.
Okay.
That's what like Shen said.
No, that's what like some hero just stopped it right out there. I don't know who it was, but he got him.
Jack Burton. Leave Jack Burton alone.
He showed great courage
in stopping those two car alarms.
What were we talking about?
Spoopies.
I was just gonna say it's an indicator of the kind of lighter, slightly kitschier side of scary, and that's a handy to have a word for that.
So it's spooky, but not terrifying.
Right. If you walk into the section to Target where they get to get all the decorations, mostly spoopy stuff.
Okay. So you wouldn't want to go to, say, the spoopiest haunted house. Well, you might.
Some people might.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
No. the spoopiest haunted house in Texas is
I
not.
I feel like Grumpy Cat with little devil horns on it would be their mascot.
Yeah, you're right. No, you want to go to the pants-wettingest, most terrifying yes. haunted house there is.
The most pants-shittingly scary haunted house.
Dave actually wants to go to a haunted house, like an actual haunted house.
Right? Yeah. It's precisely because I don't believe there would be an actual haunted house.
You want to go to a haunted lighthouse, let's be honest.
Well, yeah.
All right. Let's hit this news. One couple bits of TV news. First of all, Kyle Killen is adapting Velvet for Paramount Network.
That is to say, Ed Brubaker's Velvet comic from Image.
Yep.
And the Paramount Network has produced nothing. So yes. This is
And Kyle Killen has produced, that's why I put it out that way so we can further explain.
Yeah.
Kyle Killen has done numerous very good shows that last about three episodes. Or one season in some cases.
So what you're saying is potentially we'll get three episodes of a solid show and then it'll fade into nothingness?
I think it's possible.
Or this is the breakout.
Yeah, that's what I think is the possibilities, because Killen's really good at this. He does TV like nobody else. Velvet's a great property. It's a 70s period spy piece. That's basically, the premise is, what if Moneypenny was actually the best spy?
Yeah.
And I just reread it the other day. It's a hardcover. It's also three trades, and it's like 15 issues. Great series. And Paramount Network could be a boon, because it means that their cancellation threshold is going to be a little lower. Like,
definitely.
They just want this to be their thing so that they can get people to pay their, you know, $5 a month for whatever streaming network. Worked out for Discovery and CBS All Access so far.
Has it?
I don't know.
I feel like CBS All Access is definitely... they've earned their money.
Yeah. Well,
I haven't been keeping up on the financial side of it.
From the announcements they've made, I feel
if that's the case, people owe them a big apology.
No. This is the internet. That's not how that works. I have seen at least two think pieces about how it was the biggest mistake they ever make. And at least two other think pieces about how they're geniuses.
However, they've made a lot of money. They don't care what the internet says.
Yeah, I think sure. I think you can argue at this right. point that they've done all right.
But I suspect the year or two building up to it and hearing people talk about it was the least fun of their lives.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, I'm sure.
Michael B. Jordan, who we all know from Creed and from numerous other places.
Fantastic Four.
We're trying to talk about the good stuff, Nick. Why do you got to break
why
us
would
down?
You do that?
Creed was amazing. Fantastic Four was not amazing.
So he's returning to a he's returning to TV, where he was on Friday Night Lights.
Yes.
And he's doing a show called Raising Dion at Netflix, which is a superhero family drama. I don't think we have a date on it just yet.
No, I don't think there was.
But is there's some artwork. Was this actually a comic first?
Hmm. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, it's,
if so, it is one that I have never heard of. It would maybe something that went under the radar, maybe a webcomic or something.
It's the showrunner from Unreal and Judging Amy, writer producer from American Gods and Logan,
I think that's a decent pedigree.
Yeah, and so yeah, this is a.
I mean, it's on our radar because of Michael B. Jordan. I mean, it's one of those. It's actors.
It's a woman who's raising her son after the death of her husband. Oh, okay, wait. Her husband is Michael B. Jordan, and he's dead.
Were you going to get flashbacks of him?
Maybe so. So the normal drama raising a son as a single mom are amplified when Dion starts to manifest several magical superhero-like abilities. She must keep her son's gift secret with the help of Mark's best friend, Pat, and protect Dion from antagonists out to exploit him while figuring out the origin of his abilities. So maybe he's not really dead.
Hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, it's interesting. There's a little teaser up that we haven't watched. But I like Michael B. Jordan. I like superheroes. I like Netflix.
It sounds like the kind of thing that would be easy to be kind of prosaic and kind of so-so.
Yeah.
Sort of superhero drama meets family quibbles.
Yeah.
If they brought enough kind of new to the table, if they had some serious meat to the drama and or found the right vibe for the humor. It could be something special.
Well, Netflix has that. Netflix is a pretty good track record.
Yeah, yeah.
So
they would have a shot at it.
Constantine is confirmed to be in Legends of Tomorrow season 3.
Huh?
Which is interesting because Matt Ryan, he must have, he got this, what was probably a dream job. He was great playing Constantine.
Yeah.
And it went away immediately. And now people, it's like in that, almost in that Firefly territory, everyone's like, oh, this was so great, why did they cancel it? And then he came back for Arrow.
Yeah.
And then they're doing a CW Seed animated show.
Yeah.
And now he's going to be in Legends of Tomorrow. He clearly, they brought him back, and he's...
Constantine himself making a deal with the devil and all this stuff just to keep alive.
Yep.
I feel like it's a no-brainer to keep him on the ship.
Especially as an ensemble. I mean, he's... Yeah.
I mean, just imagine him going... They do some silly stuff on that show, just him kind of bouncing that off.
Let me just see if I could take us back to the year of 1982 or 81 or whatever, when Alan Moore created this character. Let's say I were to walk up to him and say, hey, Alan, in about... How many years? 25 years? 35?
Yeah, about 35
years. 35 years. John Constantine, your character will be so successful that he'll be on a show about a bunch of time travelers from the DC superheroes traveling around and fighting crime throughout time. And John Constantine will be with him.
Alan Moore would probably strangle you.
I've never committed violence before, but... anyway, that is a crazy fate for Constantine, but as we've all seen, the CW started from the unusual Arrow Foundation, which obviously proved to be very solid for him.
And Matt Ryan is a great Constantine. He did
I actually have yet to see more than clips.
You know what's interesting is that I'm not someone who's a super purist, but I did take issue with Constantine being back in the DC universe. I felt like he was at his best when he was at Vertigo and on his own. And yet, I feel like they've done pretty good at incorporating the DC universe. Certainly better than, say, Wildstorm, which doesn't fit there. But Constantine being in the DCU and sort of, especially the sort of darker DCU we have now, kind of makes sense to me.
It is a little bit funny. Sort of two levels. You know how Marvel had their anti-smoking thing where they eliminated all the smoking from all the heroes, including Wolverine and Ben Grimm and all that stuff?
Yep.
And people were really up in arms about it. And I will say, after all this time, it kind of didn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just like they said, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
But it is kind of an interesting little bit of a British finger in the face that DC is like, no, we're not going to take that away from him.
Is British finger in the face? Is that a saying? Is that
you know, maybe that's the one. That's their one way that they continue to homage Alan Moore. Clearly, in no other department will they play ball with him. Nick, I think you were about to say something about Constantine a minute ago, just about his portrayal or something like that. Maybe
That Matt Ryan is great at portraying that character. So.
Do you think he brings just at a glance, he looked like he might be almost a little young, because I'm kind of used to almost a 40-something or, like, mid-40 or early 40s thing he's been in.
Like
he was in the comics
young.
For a while. In the comics right now, he is, you know, younger. Did he have the edge?
Yeah, it works. I didn't love the NBC show. I did think they neutered him a little bit.
Sure.
But I think for bringing him into a shared universe, you kind of have to, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he's not, you know, 80s Sting, which is what he's supposed to be.
Right.
But they did generally, yeah, he has the look and he has the sort of world-weary vibe you're going to want.
And all of his friends die, so that's important.
Yeah. How is that going to work out with the crew?
is this how they're ending?
You know what he should be? Is he, like, looks around him when he meets him or whatever, or agrees to travel with him, and he's like, you know, I don't want to do this. I should tell you that about one in every five of my friends ends up dead in a year. And he's like, I see six of you here, so just a heads up. They could actually get a lot of fun out of something like that. I think he could be a good foil for them.
Yeah.
No,
I think so.
And it's his own ridiculous way.
Yep. You know, I realized I don't think I finished watching Legends of Tomorrow Season 2. I think I'm still like five episodes behind.
I know I haven't watched it all.
Let's quick watch the rest of it before we finish the podcast.
All right, good idea.
I'm still weirded out that they have Commander Steel on that show.
It's a little weird. There's a lot of little weird on it. Fast and Furious news. We got the sad news that Fast and Furious 9 has been delayed till 2020.
And then Tyrese Gibson went on a rant.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, yelling at Dwayne Johnson for causing the delay of this.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was one of those kind of...
And then, of course, Vin Diesel kind of came in and did the Mi Familia, just everyone calm down. We're putting the brakes a little bit so we can kind of reinvent things.
That's not the craziest thing in the world. You don't want to get too samey.
He was definitely pushing that the spinoff is what they're needing to do right now.
Which is what we're about to get to.
That's the other thing. Dwayne Johnson, Jason Statham spinoff is coming in 2019.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you guys know, that means there will be no Fast and Furious in 2018, and I don't like that.
You know what's funny is, like, I think a lot of people are like, these guys are crazy. Because I think if you haven't plugged into the vibe, I was just telling somebody about it the other day, and they were looking at me like I was a madman.
Yep.
And I was like, I understand if I had only seen the trailers and stuff like that, and maybe even some of the early ones, I don't know. I've still never seen the early ones. I might not have kind of plugged into the fun vibe of what that series has evolved into.
You guys had to browbeat me into watching it, basically.
Yes.
And when I finally did, I fell completely in love with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, at this point, it's like, it'd be like not having a Marvel Cinematic movie for me that year. It's weird to not have a festival.
Right. Yeah, I really, once I kind of fell into it, I was like, oh, this is fun. Every year I'm going to be, go have a brotastic time at the movies. And it's not even, like, as bro-y as they are. They're less bro-y than you think.
Yeah.
It's like the good-natured bro-y.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, it is entirely possible we're all going to die in a nuclear apocalypse before we get a Fast and Furious number 9, and that's a shame.
Is it possible that they could come to life off the silver screen, Last Action Hero style, and save us?
It's possible.
And they heist away 45 and throw him in a pit.
It's possible. Vin Diesel might just do that.
All I'm saying is, I was pretty impressed with their wrench or pipe fight or whatever in that one.
Yeah,
that's just something you could keep in mind.
Well, yeah,
keep it in mind
for sure. So, jumping over to comics, the two Galacticas, the original and the sci-fi version, are going head to head. In Galactica vs. Galactica comics by Peter David.
I think Peter David's probably a good choice for this clearly kind of slightly absurd project.
It's weird. Is it going to be like a universe jump where they sort of meet up with each other? And
you know, they go through... In the old show, did they do hyper jumps and all that stuff?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Hyperspace.
That's as easy a way to explain it as ever. You know, like, we hit a strange echo effect. The Cylons were testing a new weapon right as we went into hyperdrive.
Yeah.
We've landed in an alternate version of our own timeline.
You know,
it feels more like something that would happen probably on the old show.
That's what I was going to say. Peter David's work cut out for him because, the old show, fine. They wind up in a weird... The new show, it's going to be weird.
Yeah.
Them interacting with the old show.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about this the other day. Like, everybody on the new show is a bunch of hard asses.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like they would just, if they had to go toe-to-toe with it, like, they would just steamroll them.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen the old show in a while, but I'm guessing it had a little bit of that Trek vibe in it, and they were probably a little bit more can-do attitude, and they may be able to, you know, I bet their Adama was, I'm sure he was kind of more of a clever father figure, an Odin kind of guy.
No, Dave. He was a nice man. He was a very nice man.
Was he nice?
That's it. That's all he is. He's a very nice
Lauren
man.
Green?
Yeah.
No, but he was like wise, like paternal.
He's like your favorite grandpa in space.
Wilford Brimley?
Whereas Adama will just, the Adama from the sci-fi show will just straight up murder you if he has to.
Yeah, but you know what? The guy he's going to have to ask you to fire the guns to murder me is like an alcoholic.
That's true.
There's constant dissent on the ship. There's political uprisings.
You think they might miss? Right. It's not that they have the will to do it. It's just that we couldn't get Ty to get
sober. Right,
and
in that time, they've gotten the Daggett onto the ship, and it's just cut loose.
This is Adama. Unleash the Daggett.
It killed Tom Zarek. The Daggett has Zarek. Oh, man.
Yeah,
if people haven't seen the original show and don't know what a Daggett is, it's a robot dog thing.
It's a robot dog thing. And apparently a secret weapon.
A secret weapon, yeah.
The world's perfect killing machine.
They're gonna get it over there with a little bomb strapped on
it
or something.
Oh, God.
I guess
little boy, Boxy.
Yeah.
Was his dog.
Yeah.
You're like, Boxy? Daggett has to make the ultimate sacrifice.
I believe his Daggett's name was Muffet.
Oh, you're right. Daggett is actually not the name
Muffet
of the thing.
Muffet the Daggett.
Muffet the Daggett. God damn it, 70s. All right, so...
They had, like, capes and stuff, didn't they?
They did have capes.
It actually did look pretty cool, I gotta say. Their ships looked badass.
Yeah.
Anyway, ridiculous project. Could still be fun, though, under Peter David.
Speaking of ridiculous projects, let's talk about some of the DC stuff coming up. Grant Morrison is apparently co-writing with Dan DiDio and with art by Jim Lee, right?
I think
on this book called Sideways?
Spinning out of
Dark Matter or whatever it is.
Yeah, Dark Matter, Dark Knight's Metal.
I can't imagine Morrison and DiDio writing something great. DiDio is kind of like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good analogy.
DiDio is not a...
Ed Wood?
No, I was trying like an ingredient. Like, for example... You know, peanut butter and chocolate goes well together.
Right.
So if Grant Morrison was peanut butter and DiDio...
But if it was like peanut butter and cilantro or something?
Yeah. But DiDio's not even food. So it's like...
That's why I said cilantro.
Like, yeah. Oh, I see. No, it was like... It'd more be like peanut butter and a wrench. DiDio is the food as a wrench is the
food.
But
here's the thing, though. I think Grant Morrison can turn a wrench into a food.
If it was anybody but Grant Morrison you said that about, I'd be like, Nick just said the most ridiculous thing ever. But when you talk about Grant Morrison,
it makes
it's
sense.
Conceivable.
Yes.
I don't know how we got there, but when I was listening to Kevin Smith's Batman podcast, at one point he had on Dan DiDio, I think for like 2 episodes.
Yeah.
And whatever else I might say about him, he seemed to completely love his job, completely believe in it. Have his kind of bona fides of, like, you know, just utterly loving the DC Universe as a kid and all that stuff. I feel like he's made a lot of terrible decisions, written nothing that I really have ever liked.
Right.
But, like, the guy himself, I can't quite hate or anything.
No, I just wish he would not get away from DC and stop touching things.
Yeah. Just that Tom Taylor could come in wearing a DiDio mask.
Yes, exactly.
And everything would be good.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of properties I love that you should not put me in charge of.
You're just saying, keep the wrench fight in mind.
Keep the wrench fight in mind.
Well, what's the project about now?
It's about Sideways.
Do we know what that is?
We don't.
Crazy dark matter.
Some new character.
I think this
thing
is sort of just announcing to people that Morrison is coming back to the main DC universe.
It's pretty notable. He's been gone
because he's working with this.
He's been indie for like what, 5 years or something.
Yeah.
He's working with the DiDio on this, and he's also going to be working on another project with Scott Snyder.
Well, what's interesting is that DC seems to be ramping in some talent because Jeff Lemire is not only is he doing the Terrifics, and they just announced that Tom Strong and his family are going to join the Terrifics, which I can only assume is an attempt to kill Alan Moore.
Here's the thing, though. DC has to know that Alan Moore doesn't look at news. He doesn't care.
Well, right. They have to know that it doesn't matter. He's never coming back, so there's no point in holding back unless you feel, as some people do, that it is like a moral and ethical thing and you shouldn't. There's a difference between... using Watchmen, which, okay, whatever. But Tom Strong was created under the Wildstorm auspices specifically so that DC would not get its hands on it.
Yeah.
And then Jim Lee sold Wildstorm to DC, and all of a sudden Alan was working with DC again.
Yeah.
So this is basically... Whereas Watchmen is sort of a reality, like, okay, well, you didn't, you know, we need these characters, it's popular, we can't give you back this best-selling graphic novel. Using Tom Strong is basically like, we don't care about you or any of your artistic integrity, and it's a little jerky.
I wonder if that will also, by the way, include, like, reprinting a bunch of Tom Strong stuff.
Maybe so.
New trades or stuff. That's actually, weirdly, that was one that I never read much of, so I thought it had Chris Sprouse artwork and all that.
So I mean,
sort of, it was kind of his Doc Savage analog. But I know he usually, as with a lot of his stuff, I presume he kind of found his own direction with it.
He did, and here's the thing: I actually liked Tom Strong, didn't love it, but it's a good fit with what they're going for with Terrifics. I understand why they're using it, but it is a little squicky.
You know, the only thing I don't like about that is that. First of all, I just don't know much about Tom Strong, but. The Terrifics, I liked it being made up of kind of DC characters.
Yeah.
And Tom Strong is not a DC character.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if he's going to be part of the main team. I think it's...
What's that?
I don't think he's part of the main team. I think he's just they're going to run into their family.
You know, especially... Actually, that makes sense, because if they're an FF-type family and they're a group...
And
they
Tom Strong
they obviously
definitely
are. Well, what I was going to say is they'll be, like, dimension hopping and stuff. It's like they could travel to... For all I know, they could bring it out to life from the comic books, you know.
Yeah.
That's the kind of weird thing that could be going on for all
I
know.
And it's Lemire writing it, right? Yeah. I mean, Lemire's writing everything now.
Lemire's writing everything now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, that's another thing. Lemire is working on a new Inferior Five book, which I don't know if people even know what the Inferior Five is. It's like, they're...
Group of screw-up superheroes,
right?
Yeah.
And he's working with Keith Giffen, who's worked on them before.
Yeah.
And it's going to be set during the 80s. So it's a period piece.
Is that just his own nostalgia?
Probably.
Every single person who grew up in the 80s wants to do some project in the 80s.
And I think, is Giffen presumably doing the co-writing and art probably on
He's doing
probably
co-writing and art.
Yeah.
And then Lemire is drawing the five-page backup with Peacemaker that appears in every issue.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Which is kind of cool.
Giffen,
I know.
Yeah, there's some nice preview art of it.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. I mean,
Giffen is a guy who often collaborates with people, maybe exclusively. He works with scripters. He's almost always seems to be working with somebody. I think he could actually be an interestingly strong fit with Lemire.
Huh?
I don't know if they'll... Do we know if it's going to be comedic, darkly comedic? Do we have any knowledge of...
With Giffen, you kind of feel like it could be,
I feel like it's probably going to be comedic.
I believe as originally intended, they were definitely a semi-comedic team.
Yeah, I mean, their members include, like, Merryman and Dumb Bunny, and... I mean, it's a weird...
But I could also see them going a dark direction with that. The same way the Tick, you know, the new TV show is kind of dark.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, it's because of those creative team, I'll give it a shot.
All right. You guys read this, I didn't. They've announced that Doomsday Clock, again, in an attempt to kill Alan Moore, is an official sequel to Watchmen. I do think there's like some kind of war, like Morrison is back, is this some kind of wizard war tactic of his?
It's possible.
But you guys read the preview pages.
I think we both liked it.
Yeah, very much so. And on the surface, a sequel to Watchmen... Doesn't sound like a great idea.
Potentially a terrible idea because it was such a perfect little finite thing.
Geoff Johns' track record is very up and down.
Right. Although in the big scheme of like how people accept his work and like what it does for DC, it's more up than down.
Yeah, he's definitely one of their mainstay talents.
For us though, I'd say he's more hit and miss. But he can be a hit.
Gary Frank is kind of an unknown artist to a lot of people.
I guess so, but he's...
Gary Frank's been around for like 30 years.
He's,
I know, but he's never hit like... This would be his biggest work ever. He worked with Johns on Batman year one.
And
that
Superman.
Was did he work on Superman?
He did Superman with Johns. Remember, he did
the one that looked like
Christopher Reeve and was a little creepy?
That was a little creepy.
The weird horror.
But he's actually like a super good artist.
He is.
He's a super good artist who has a few quirks that are sometimes a little bit... Sometimes you look at his faces and you're like... They can see me through the page and they're going to kill me.
Yeah.
But other than that, his density of work is a good fit for someone trying to, like, not emulate the exact style, but much something of the style of, why can't I suddenly say...
Dave Gibbons.
Dave Gibbons from Watchmen.
But the first six pages of Doomsday Clock, or we assume is the first six pages.
That's what they've said, I think.
Yeah. Takes place in the year 1992, so what, a decade after the end
of
Watchmen?
Not even quite that. I think it probably would have been in 86 or something like that, or 85 maybe.
So a few years, and it seems the...
I think about 7 years, if I'm not
mistaken. It seems the thing that Ozymandias has done to save the world is slowly unraveling.
Yep.
And has
I can't remember if they made out specifically that Rorschach's journal did get out there.
We can guess that, but we don't know for certain.
I do think, like, to some degree, like, ending on that, it's sort of like the ending to John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah.
The, you know, the precipice that it leaves you on is the part of what makes it great, you know, that sort of unknown. So answering that in any way is kind of dumb, but this was an interesting, you know, still a part of me that does want to know.
It's narrated from a voice that they don't tell you who it is at the start.
But anybody who's read Watchmen will recognize that narrative caption.
It's true. And you see sort of
a certain dark nihilistic poetry to it.
Yeah, a little bit. And it's basically just seeing how the world is kind of on the brink of destruction yet again. Kind of mirroring some of what we're going through right now.
Right, even though it was 92, I felt like it was very specifically in 92 that actually it kind of reflected the chaos of 2017. Which is an interesting thing to do. I don't know, you know, if that quite makes sense to do if you're kind of trying to make it the real world. But at least... You know, Watchmen was written and thrived in a time of Cold War paranoia, the very end, the last gasp of the Cold War. I feel like we're in another time of paranoia.
It's true.
I would say heightened, maybe, from how it was in 1985.
So I haven't read these pages, and I'm a neutral observer here. I don't care to see more Watchmen from Geoff Johns and Gary Frank.
Uh-huh.
I don't care that it exists. I assume it's going to make us a lot of money, and therefore, I guess, ultimately, I tilt toward it.
Uh-huh.
But it does occur to me, if it's in 92, is this essentially a prequel to New 52 and Rebirth? Like, are we going to see...
Well,
because we know Superman and some of these guys are going to be in it, which means that we're going to see how Manhattan decided to muck around the DC Universe.
Well, there's also a correlation with the year, the 1992. In the DC Universe, what did that herald?
I don't know.
Death of Superman.
Oh.
And we know Superman is going to be entangled in this story.
Right. I think presumably maybe the reason why, you know, things were kind of glitchy for Dr. Manhattan when he created the New 52, sort of understand might have happened, was because of, like, Superman's presence. Well, ultimately in Rebirth...
Because Superman did exist in the Watchmen universe as a comic.
As a comic, right.
So here's a question. Is this going to reveal that Doomsday was an inside job? that basically Ozymandias created, or not Ozymandias, somebody created Doomsday to kill Superman to get him out of the way?
It's possible.
And if all of this leads me to believe, remember when Hal Jordan seemed unfixable?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Geoff Johns sort of found a way to do it?
Yeah.
I think that the same kind of thing where he's like trying to resolve Death of Superman and New 52 and all that kind of stuff. For all that I've gotten tired of Geoff Johns in general, he is good at that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what interested me about this was that before any DC elements have really been introduced, even though this is a pastiche of Alan Moore's style, it was like, if I'm not mistaken, Nick, 9-panel grid.
It was.
The same kind of like, you remember like the opening shot, which is that long pan from the bloody smiley face up to the cops looking down from the building. It didn't use like that exact shot, but there were those kind of pan arounds and stuff as other narration was going on and stuff was happening. There was actually, it was pretty dense with information in the Alan Moore style. So this felt like, actually like it was a sequel to Watchmen. In the sense, you know, it didn't feel like there was going to be a bunch of DC heroes, and it just felt like it was Watchmen at this point.
Hmm.
So that's almost more the point I was interested in. It's almost like this could be, you know, we had the before Watchmen prequel stuff. This felt like it could just be an after Watchmen prequel or sequel sort of thing. Now, obviously, things are going to change, but the tone is Watchmen.
Yes, very much so.
I do wonder if, like, if there will, whenever the DC parts intersect with it, will the storytelling change to reflect DC storytelling? Will the pages open up and breathe more? It would be kind of interesting to have, like, juxtaposed styles. You're on the Watchmen world, you get one style. You're in DC territory, you get DC style.
Yeah.
Sure it could be very jarring and terrible.
I could see John's doing those things, and so it might not work. It might be a train wreck.
Yeah.
But
I have a feeling it's not going to be a train wreck,
Based on these pages, I was fairly pleased at the level of detail and craft.
I was moved enough to post a link to it and say some nice things about it on Facebook, even knowing that it would earn me the ire and disgust of 55% of my friends.
Yeah.
And I thought Gary Frank did a really good job of kind of working in the style of Gibbons.
Some of the best work I've seen from him. And also, I do something I admire about that nine-panel grid style is that there are writers who overwrite. We know that. It happens all the time. You read hit one of those wall of text pages, and it's just terrible. A lot of times, if a writer did nine panels on a page, I would consider that overwritten. Alan Moore had has a pretty strong gift for making that compelling right from the get go, and I feel like Geoff Johns was channeling that as well, because although these were six dense pages, I was very into everything on them.
Yeah, I agree.
So I feel like it's a promising preview. I know that Johns, by the way, said he kind of didn't want to show them because he wanted people to experience it all at once, which I can respect.
I can.
But I also think it was a good tease.
I was going to say, DC Hype Machine is in overdrive, I think, for this a little bit.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, they're risking a lot on this, and in some ways, all of Rebirth was predicated on the concept.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we've talked about this. The little side stories and mysteries leading up to it in Teen Titans and Batman and Flash, it turns out none of that stuff interested me whatsoever. I wanted them to cut to the chase. I wanted Watchmen meets the DC Universe, not mysteries preluding it.
Yeah.
And so this is what I was waiting for, and it does. I feel like actually having skipped that stuff, I probably won't be missing anything in particular.
No, I mean, and they've outright said, and I don't know if they'll stick to this, that it's 12 issues, there's not going to be tie-ins.
I wonder if they're going to do the text page interstitials.
I don't know.
That'd be interesting.
Or a new pirate comic.
or something that's less a pirate comic and more like an... I want an alternate comic that's a superhero comic from, like, the corrupted Dr. Manhattan universe or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess that's what New 52 was.
they're just gonna reprint some New 52 comics in between.
Let's find the worst of the worst. Something from Dan DiDio. That kid on the street is gonna be written. He's like, what is this shit? No, that was good stuff.
All right,
but that will be interesting. I bet they will touch on that. Yeah. I think there will be some sort of comic within a comic.
Maybe so. There's also a big Milestone relaunch coming from DC, which. I love the Milestone books. I have, I think, all of them pretty much.
Yep.
This was a multicultural universe created in like the early 90s when everyone was creating superhero universes. Yep. Notable, especially for the involvement of Dwayne McDuffie, who is one of the great lost writers of this of the industry.
A lot of people probably particularly know his work from Justice League Unlimited, the cartoon. Yeah.
But he had been doing great stuff like 20 years before that and just never really got his due until Justice League Unlimited. So he died, and I feel like every Milestone relaunch is maybe doomed because of that. So this one, they're definitely going all in. Like this is a big push. It's Reginald Hudlin, who was or is the head of BET,
right?
And
who also wrote Black Panther.
Wrote
for
Black
some
Panther
years.
Books for a little while. Has some roots in comics, along with Derek Dingle and Dennis Cohen, who are two of the creative people behind Milestone.
I saw a cover this week from Dennis Cohen, and I was like, man, this guy can still draw up a storm.
And then along with that, they're bringing in Greg Pak. They're bringing in Jim Lee to do some covers. They're bringing in novelist Alice Russell. And then Kyle Baker is going to be involved, as well as Ken Lashley. So some notable people. They're launching with five books. It's called Earth M. There's Static
Shock.
That's
actually a pretty clever branding,
yeah.
I have to admit.
So there's Milestone, Static Shock, Duo, Love Army, and Earth M. And Milestone is Icon and Rocket. Duo is a twist on Zombie, which is a pre-existing concept. And Static Shock is Static, of course. And then Love Army and Earth M are kind of new characters and stuff.
Will they be rebuilding from the ground up?
It sounds like, yeah.
For those that don't know, like... Icon and Rocket was like a homeless teenage girl.
No, she wasn't homeless.
Or was she homeless? She was running with some thieves, basically, though, right?
Her boyfriend was a dumb kid who tried to rob this guy, this rich guy, who turned out to be like Superman,
right?
Who basically Icon was he's an alien who landed in the South during the pre-Civil War era, and he was found by a slave, and so
he took on the look.
His body became like that, and so he basically grew up during slavery and then lived as an immortal through all this time. And because he had sort of managed to get himself to this point where he was rich because he was immortal, he had adopted this notion of buy your bootstraps, log cabin Republican type.
Yeah, he was a conservative black Superman.
And then he had a run-in with Rocket, who was sort of living the reality of black experience, and pointed out to him that, yeah, that some of the reason you're able to do this is because you are an immortal alien, and really, you're not as black as you think you are.
Yeah. I think that was that dialectic sort of between them was at the heart of that book for sure, and in some ways the heart of kind of what Milestone wanted to do was to challenge and you know, even by no means was he Icon just a fall guy for her progressive viewpoints.
No, he was a well thought out character. You understood where he was coming from, and he was a good character. But
I'm glad they're launching with that.
Rocket was the heart of that book, and she was great. She's a great character.
Yeah.
So
they've got the right lineup. Static is sort of the Icon, if you'll forgive the term, the Icon that most people will know.
He's their Spider-Man.
And then they have a good pedigree from a lot of people. I do think you might be right that Dwayne McDuffie was the glue that can't be replaced, that held it all together.
And I don't think Reginald Hudlin is up to that task, but maybe not. He's only had a couple comics, and I haven't liked any of them, but you never know. I wasn't a big Guggenheim fan, and yet he's writing the X-Men I never knew I wanted with X-Men Gold.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would like to see it. I would like to, I liked how those old Milestone books looked. I liked their color processes and stuff they used. I would like for DC to try a more, maybe they need to wait and see if this takes off, but I'd like to see them reprint full runs on those, the way they do Hellblazer and other stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Legion is getting a series from Peter Milligan writing, which is interesting.
I missed this over the weekend.
Yeah.
Legion of Superheroes, which we've known
no,
was...
No.
Oh, Legion.
Marvel's Legion.
Marvel's Legion.
David Holler.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, yeah. I thought this was the
No, we're
DC's
not getting Legion.
Legion
of Superheroes.
DC's Legion by Peter Milligan interested me. I was ready for that.
Yeah, no, sorry.
Oh, I don't care about David Holler.
Yeah. I wonder why you were so interested in that.
Yeah,
like Legion.
Who gives a
but,
crap?
But, you know, the reason, of course, is because of the
TV show.
Legion TV show.
Yeah.
And Peter Milligan's the right guy to write it.
Yeah, that's he's a fit there, too.
And they're doing a miniseries called Rogue and Gambit, which... I don't love the Rogue Gambit dynamic, but it's being written by Kelly Thompson, who does the new Hawkeye, and I really like her stuff. So.
And a lot of people like that dynamic. That's some of their favorite.
Some people do.
I actually, because I didn't, honestly, I checked out of the X-Men through most of the 90s. I think I didn't particularly like Gambit in one at all, really, at the time, just as sort of a side observer. I saw him as, you know, the wannabe Wolverine, tough, you know, cool guy. But I did kind of later come to like him. I think something could be done with it.
Yeah,
I'm not saying they're going to come across it, but when I've seen them, the characters written together strongly, sometimes I'm like, you could work with this.
Yeah.
As it happens, I'm sure it kind of hit the stale on again off again thing that almost any on again off again couple in comics will do.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
Who's on that?
That is Kelly Thompson.
Okay, Kelly Thompson.
She writes Hawkeye.
Okay.
She's written some other stuff, but she wrote Hawkeye and then Generations Hawkeye we all liked.
Maybe then.
So I like her writing. All right, let's talk trailers. There's a bunch of them. So I've seen some of these. I haven't seen all of them. Let's start with X-Files Season 11.
I haven't seen it, nor do I particularly expect to watch it since I didn't watch the previous season.
I did watch it. I did watch the previous season. They left it in a spot that was kind of... chaotic. Viruses that have been unleashed on the world. People were dying left and right.
That's like it's more like what BPRD did to Hellboy. The kind of the world changing events.
Yeah, this is definitely world changing.
X-Files usually didn't. X-Files was usually the public will never know whatever transpired.
Yeah.
Things have definitely changed in that era. And this is Chris Carter doing his ginormous story arcs, which are not always the greatest. I feel like the show kind of hit its peaks when it was doing standalone one-shot stories.
Yeah.
In the trailer, we see Cigarette Smoking Man again, Mitch Pileggi, of course. All the players are back. Gillian Anderson did announce that this is her last season being involved with the X-Files.
Are they going to bring in Robert Patrick?
again.
I could easily see them. I don't actually ever know what happened to that character in the
Nobody
X-Files.
Nobody does.
Nobody cares.
Nobody's ever seen those episodes.
Nope.
They made them, and not a single soul on Earth watched them.
I remember the Brady Bunch episode.
I didn't even know.
I don't know
there
what you're
was
talking
one
about.
Where they like the Brady Mimic Bunch house the... was haunted or something.
Was it literally supposed to be the Brady Bunch house?
Yeah, it was like the house that they was filmed.
I mean,
at.
For a comedic episode, that's not the craziest idea.
No, I thought it was. I liked Robert Patrick.
Marsha.
I don't think it's possible for me to care any less about X-Files at this point.
Yeah,
Randy, did you not watch the?
I watched 2 or 3 episodes and hated most of them.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm watching it just sort of to watch. To see where it finally goes.
I will
goes.
File this away in the X-Files portion of my brain. I love, a complete catalog.
I love Gillian Anderson. I really like David Duchovny. I used to really like X-Files. I don't want to see it
again.
Well,
it's one of those properties that I think made such an impact on my childhood.
Yeah.
I'm waiting until they cross it over with Watchmen. Then I'll see what's going on.
So I'm ever the curious. I want to know where it goes. Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going over a cliff right now. Whether that can be salvaged, who knows?
What was the general, what was the general public reaction to it?
The critics hated it. I don't know what the general public reaction was.
I seem to remember people kind of liked it,
yeah,
though.
I mean, overall, I think, I mean, it's one of those, you know, look at Rotten Tomatoes, critics have it at 2%, and...
I bet it's not 2%.
No, and the public has it at, like, 75%.
Right,
so it's
right.
Just that weird kind of difference.
I'm going to go ahead and guess, without having looked it up, that season broadly rated for critics... 55, and for the public, 83%.
It's possible.
I mean, that sounds in the ballpark, at least.
Do they actually rate whole seasons?
I mean, I'm sure it's...
They should.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they ever go back and kind
of
amend
what were your numbers?
There.
55 and 83.
65 and 72.
Because in the ballpark, but the public didn't like it that much.
Nope.
I don't know, 72%.
The critics
not
liked
bad.
It a little more, the public liked it a little less.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right, so what else we got?
We got a little 20-second teaser for Happy with Chris Maloney and Patton Oswalt voicing the blue horse Happy.
That makes me happy.
Yep, this is Grant Morrison's weird little hard-boiled crime drama about a former, detective?
It's an ex-cop.
An ex-cop, the hard-boiledest of the hard-boiled, almost like kind of... tropey intentionally, who sees a little purple, blue horse or purplish blue horse that talks to him like a ridiculous Roger Rabbit song.
Wait a minute, I'm thinking it's ex-cop turned hitman, right?
I believe he had fallen on doing contract killings.
Yeah.
And it was dark. This is, a super R-rated book with all the swears in the book. And then hey, how's it going? Kind of.
Yes.
Yeah. I really like this comic. And knowing that Patton Oswalt is voicing the horse makes me interested in seeing the show.
Yeah.
For some reason, I think I didn't like it when I first watched the little teaser. I just rewatched it again a minute ago, and I was like, I'm not quite sure what put me off. It looks like the comic.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that gives me pause is sci-fi, and then my brain has to remind myself that sci-fi's actually made decent stuff. So. And they seem to be more on a roll lately with The Expanse and Magicians and a few others.
They've escaped the shadow of Sharknado.
No one ever escapes the Sharknado.
And... that's not really a shadow anymore. That's just a cash cow.
Yeah.
That's a cash shark.
Cash shark.
You guys watched, I did not get a chance to watch the Jack Ryan trailer for Amazon.
What's it actually called?
Jack Ryan.
That's it? I thought it was Jack Ryan something Shadow War.
No, that was the movie that Chris Pine did that ultimately
this
went
doesn't
nowhere.
Have one?
Jack Ryan, Operation Shadow War Patriot Love.
Some of all fears.
Some of all patriot love.
We're making this into a more comedic thing.
It looks cool.
The preview that was shown looks badass.
The tone, I would say, of this with the... what's his name from The Office?
John Krasinski.
Playing a younger Jack Ryan.
Sort of in the... kind of the spy game a little bit.
Yeah. The tone was kind of Patriot Games, I felt like. He was...
Okay.
He was... he was doing "I'm just an analyst" stuff, and being dragged into not frontline situations, but into dangerous zones. I'm just saying
he was definitely doing some spy stuff. So he
was he?
Yeah, okay. I mean, Jack Ryan was supposed to.
Also, awesomely cast is what's his name from The Wire.
The Bunk.
Yeah, The Bunk.
Whose name I'm blanking on right
he's
now.
He's pretty much great in everything as Greer.
Greer.
Wendell Pierce. Is
right,
his
AKA
name.
James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones.
Yep.
Who really owned that role in those movies.
We may have not seen the woman who ultimately becomes his wife.
Right, he was drinking
wife.
A beer with her and telling her, what did he say? I'm a
He's like a logistics specialist for,
for the Western Hemisphere or something like that. And she's like, that sounds, and he's like, boring, and you know. And of course, yeah, we know his life is anything but. There was a lot of running around and shooting and glimpses of just Middle Eastern stuff, and it all kind of had what could be a little bit of a generic 24-ish sort of thing look to it. Like, I couldn't make heads or tails of those other than they looked competently filmed and, like...
I was going to say...
They looked interesting.
Yeah, it's beautifully shot, well done. It looks kind of dramatic and...
I got good vibes off of him, the guy playing Greer, and... the general tone of it, and as somebody who, like, those
swears were dropped,
I'm gonna say yes. Yes, awesomely so. I really like, I'm gonna say, the first three Jack Ryan movies. So we got Hunt for Red October, Patriot Games, and to a lesser extent
Clear and Present Danger,
although that one actually kind of grew on me over time.
I love Clear and Present Danger, if alone for that alleyway scene.
Oh man, that's so good.
And The World is Gray, Jack. The World is Gray.
This reminded me of what I like about those. In the we got Ben Affleck, Sum of All Fears, to
I don't know what you're talking about.
To crush all our hopes later on, you have to acknowledge our history.
And then Chris Pine's just kind of boring one, right?
It was boring. Yeah. I like Chris Pine, but it wasn't a good vehicle for him.
I seem to remember I started to watch it one time and did not finish it. I was ready to watch it. I still probably will someday.
Yeah, I'm curious to
but
watch this.
But looks better.
I wanted to see this trailer. I just didn't have time to watch it.
And I can easily see it working as a series.
I love the sort of vibe, the line that the Tom Clancy stories walk between, you know, intrigue, spy game stuff, a pretty charismatic lead, even though it's not like... He's not supposed to be super charismatic, but they picked good actors to play him with Alec Baldwin and Harrison Ford. You know, you're going to have people that are very watchable, and they always cast the hell out of those.
Hopefully we'll see, I always forget, William Dafoe's character.
But
maybe we'll see
what's
some
his name
representation.
Is it Jack? Shit. No, John?
Yeah, the guy from Rainbow Six.
Guy from Rainbow Six, yeah.
But he doesn't show up in Jack's life till later on, does he?
Well, no, but he could definitely be an operative working that he's, like, analyzing.
Right, and,
I
guess I don't know how heavily they might be revising these, rethinking them. Yeah. Clancy has, man, that guy sold out hard. There's people who write other novels under his sort of aegis.
Yep.
There's tons of video game stuff. He for sure rules the video game world.
Yeah.
I don't think about it very often, but he created an empire of sort of, 24, I'm sure, probably wouldn't exist but for him. And
that's true.
Yeah. All kinds of stuff. Anyway, it looks good. Check out the trailer, see what you think.
Two more TV trailers and then two movie trailers. Castle Rock, another Hulu, which is the Stephen King show, the shared universe show.
Yeah.
Just kind of a spooky scene, like mood setting. There's not a lot of story to it.
There were creepy images.
Yeah.
You know what? The one that stuck with me is that, which could be, well, it was probably meant to be creepy, that mascot waving.
Yeah.
It looked
little
like
girls waving at a mascot. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like being waved at by like a clown or something like that.
It's like that eerie scene from Conjuring 3. Insidious 3.
Insidious 3, yeah. To me, the creepiest scene in it was that shadowy figure waving at somebody. Let's see. There were little glimpses that you pointed out. Sissy Spacek is in it.
Who that was.
From what I understand, is there is a new story, one that we've not gotten. It's not based on a Stephen King story,
but maybe weave in some elements.
But
of
it's
his...
going to weave in elements of a lot of his other short stories. In the trailer, you saw Sissy Spacek, whether or not she's playing
a grown-up Carrie.
A grown-up Carrie.
Carrie survived the events of Carrie, didn't she?
I'm pretty sure she did.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
I think the town kind of didn't, but...
We saw, like, a bumper sticker that said Shawshank Prison.
Yep.
The Bill Skarsgård as himself instead of it shows up, whether or not
that's
that
meta.
Has any...
I'm trying to remember. There was an eerie sequence, just a glimpse... Was it like a dog or something that like walks away from a little spot of sand and there's partially like, buried head in it?
Yeah.
I was like, that was a creepy visual.
Well, the Saint Bernard looks very much like Cujo.
Was it an actual Saint Bernard?
It looked like it.
So now that I think about it, I bet you could go back and analyze and there may be maybe more
tons
imagery they're playing with.
And then Scott Glenn shows up and he's playing Alan Pangborn, which if anyone's read Needful Things, that's definitely...
He
was a main character.
How do you know he's playing him? Do they actually say
that? They've actually outright said that. Not in the trailer, but in, casting news.
Okay.
So they're definitely hitting a lot of Stephen King's best of.
Yeah, okay. I'm interested in this.
That's actually, yeah, there's not a lot to say about it because we haven't really seen any extended scenes or anything, but promising visuals. It does sound like some kind of neat little nods to the stories.
Well, also,
I would like for them to pull it off. I don't know.
I mean, Hulu's on a high right now, so I think they're the one to watch as opposed to our next trailer.
Yeah, the other trailer is Runaways, which... This is a... I'm going to be nervous about this until it's on the air, but this short little trailer, it's like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
The vibe is... I mean, everybody looks right. The it's right out of the first issue of the comic.
Yep. The tone is very close.
Yeah.
Yeah. For just in case you haven't read that, it's Brian Vaughn's kind of breakout comic from Marvel. Set in the Marvel Universe, but off to the side where you really didn't see a lot of the superheroes every once in a while. About the kids who find out their parents are supervillains and go into hiding and on the run and kind of like find out that they have the abilities of their own.
Yeah.
There's you know, it had a mixture of kind of, you know, darkness, humor, definitely growing up, angsty John Hughes-y stuff.
But yeah. It was like no
Joss Whedon-ish vibe.
No costumes, though. It's all sort of just kids.
They were just normal kids.
But what's interesting is, like, we see Molly's famous hat, we see the Staff of One. Pretty sure we saw Old Lace.
Yeah, Old Race, for those who don't know, is a Velociraptor. Or not a Velociraptor, actually a Deinonychus.
Yeah, Deinonychus.
Which is the slightly bigger, like, Velociraptors, yeah. I think.
But it's, like, genetically altered to basically protect one of the kids who follows their every command.
Yep. And, like Randy was saying, the vibe was very much right out of the comics. And in a good way, not one of those, like, oh... I'm going to know every single thing that happens here. Right. But, like, they got the tone right. Yeah. I'm sure there'll be lots of little tweaks.
Well, they are going to make changes because Nick pointed out the second episode is going to be from the parents' point of view.
Yes.
We're going to see the same events from the parents' point of view.
It's honestly pretty clever.
Yeah.
And I think the people that they chose for the parents are really, really good at, and I'm excited to see what they can bring to those characters. But, yeah, I'm wondering if we're going to get, like, the Gibberum and all the other craziness.
I don't know.
I bet so.
I would imagine so. I don't see why.
I think
why
you can make those look pretty creepy on screen, these, like, otherworldly giant-headed gods or whatever they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. This trailer...
But if I'm correct, we don't expect it to necessarily be in the Marvel Universe proper.
I don't think it needs to be.
Right, but...
They haven't outright said that it's not.
They haven't said that it's not.
Okay.
I hope that they, like, the Inhumans doesn't cross over with it.
I know
they're going to use it to give the Inhumans a boost.
I know. I don't know if you know the answer to this question, because I don't, and I didn't look at it, but why is this on Hulu and not Netflix? Was it just sort of Marvel trying to expand their brand?
I think it was how they got it pitched. I mean, I don't think they have an exclusive agreement anywhere.
Because this is still being produced by, like, Jeff Loeb, I would assume, right? I mean, it's Marvel Television. It falls under his purview.
Maybe he won't have much to do with it.
Remember, the vibe looked good.
Yes,
yeah, no, I'm not trying to bring it down. I thought the trailer was great. I think the general vibe, because they did show the first episode at New York Comic-Con.
Here's what we really need to know. Are they going to have the leapfrog vehicle?
I don't know.
Is that going to be too crazy? Is that too crazy?
It might be too crazy. But we'll see.
Any crazier than giant demon?
If it is set in the Marvel Universe, it is actually easier to do something like that. If you know that Iron Man exists out there and Spider-Man fought a guy in a vulture costume and all that stuff, then having a giant robot frog vehicle...
Is that any crazier than having a giant dinosaur or a velociraptor?
Yeah, it is.
It is crazier.
We've all seen. We can see, imagine a dinosaur being somehow revived. Jurassic Park actually did it fairly realistically.
No,
but a giant frog bot.
Yeah,
a frog car that hops.
Frog car that hops is a little weirder.
It's a little weirder.
Okay, you might be right.
Finally, movie trailers. There was a new trailer for Justice League. You guys watched it?
Yep.
I'm guessing that this is not going to particularly tip people one way or the other. You're either kind of, you're generally into trying it out, or you're generally not at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like I'm probably going to go see this on opening
night. I like that. It's a pretty good trailer. The only thing I don't like is that, like, I feel like a lot of the movie is going to be them fighting on an orange, broken city. It felt like they were fighting in, you know, like an apocalyptic world. That might have actually been Apocalypse, but I don't think it was.
I feel like it was like an Apocalypse, Earth, like encroaching upon Earth.
Yeah, it could be.
And I don't know if their nature was to clear the area, and that's why there was no people, so they don't want any of that conversation that Superman brought to the table.
Right. I am worried about, like, long fights of CG things fighting other CG things. But Everything else about the trailer I generally enjoyed, especially the character moments.
Yeah, the character moments is sort of what I'm there for.
The new stuff, the new scene with Lois briefly in it had a little poignancy to it. The Flash brought some needed humor to it.
Him exclaiming upon the bat signal in the air. It's like, that's for you!
Getting kind of used to the ridiculous Aquaman.
Bro Aquaman is my favorite thing about
these so
far.
Aquaman.
Yeah.
He really seems to be enjoying his time out there and bringing the Khal Drogo, but with a little bit more of almost a Thor vibe to it, or Hercules in the Marvel comics when he's like having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The weird flying cyborg is still weird for me. But...
Yeah, I wish they weren't doing that.
Because they're turning cyborg into Iron Man.
I did like the thing, I don't know if it was in this trailer, where he's like, at some point he's like, oh, it's okay, Alfred, I got this. Clearly, like, cutting in on a transmission, and Alfred's like, who are you? Like, and you are? And I was like, oh, that's pretty badass if he's so cool that he can, like, cut into Batman's communications array or whatever it was he did.
J.K. Simmons as Gordon looks interesting.
Something about his mustache is freaking me out.
Is that the subtitle for Justice League?
I don't like the looks of it. I don't like the looks of it. For better or worse, I'm in the thank you, sir, can I have another mode for DC movies. I like Suicide Squad. Randy's shaking his head, but what else would you expect? Around the same way he came around on Star Wars for Marvel.
I've made Randy watch all of these movies because I've shown them in the store.
That's not true. I haven't seen all of them. I still have not seen all of Superman versus Batman versus...
But you kind of have.
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Yeah.
Enough to know I'm justified in my hatred of it. So thank you.
It's fun to watch Randy's pain, though, isn't it?
Every once in a while.
Anyway, so yeah, I think we're both kind of on board it.
Yeah, I'm in.
I'm waiting for reviews.
I don't think the reviews are going to be any...
What? I bet it's going to do okay.
You think so?
I think Wonder Woman being in it and having been really good... Whedon being involved, I think that's a possibility.
Okay, I guess that was a big thing that we did see in this trailer. We did see the Amazons.
Watching over your shoulder, and I'd only watched it once before. I guess I didn't notice the Amazon thing.
So we got to see Wonder Woman's mom again. So still alive, and I guess have not made contact with Diana. So that'll be interesting.
Okay. Yeah, those. I wonder if they did any reshoots and stuff for that. Do we know if they did to kind of Wonder Woman up a bit more?
They definitely did some reshoots.
We know they've done reshoots. I mean
they should. They should. They should recognize that that's probably their best asset right now.
Finally, I want to talk about the Pacific Rim Uprising trailer, which I believe Dave was not as big into, but I was super into.
Is it wrong because I want to get it on till I die?
It does have some weird music. The thing for me is like this looked clearly to me like. What has happened, and I'm not sure, but it looks like Jaegers are fighting Jaegers.
I was trying to figure out, were they doing that, or were they training?
I don't know, because it looked like a fight. And I wondered, and there's a shot of a Jaeger, like, crashing through the city and people, like, running away. And I'm wondering if they've gone sort of renegade without any monsters to fight and turned into sort of a gladiatorial, like, mech mercenaries or something.
Maybe.
And then the monsters are going to unite them again.
Yeah.
That's what I think is going on. Also, there's a, what's Finn's real name?
John Boyega?
John Boyega.
Oh, John Boyega. Sorry,
John Boyega playing Stacker Pentecost's son is gives a Stop the Apocalypse speech that is sort of the spine of the whole thing. The big giant kaiju, the multiple teams of mecha, the guys with like the laser whips. It basically looks like they took everything and made more of it. And I can see where that is a downer for people, but for me, that's exactly what I want.
And they brought back Charlie Day. And they brought back Charlie Day. And the British counterpart.
Charlie Day. Who's Charlie Day?
He's the one of the scientists.
Right.
They brought both the scientists back.
Yep. What's his name is not going to be back? The white guy lead?
No.
Mako is like she's like, yeah, she looks like she's like super important, like head of the some kind of
my issue was it looked a little too samey to me. I didn't want to see, I was okay with seeing the son of
Idris Elba.
But I kind of didn't want him to like be literally doing the same thing his dad did in giving a unifying speech.
I did.
and also, if he was, it should have been a better speech.
Yeah.
We saw a snippet of it.
But, I mean, you're going to have a hard time topping it's one of those great speeches. It's kind of like the Independence Day speech. Yeah. It's a memorable speech.
I could write a better one.
Sure you could. But I also love seeing like missiles and chain guns and cool weapons. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
the coolest thing for me was sort of the notion of like three Jaegers at once taking them on.
Yep.
Is it still, what's his name, Guillermo del Toro directing?
No.
It's somebody else.
It's somebody else.
Okay. I wonder how that'll go. One of the things, you know, I'm not usually a big fan of his. His particular stuff is a little too, his horror is usually a little too heavy-handed for me, honestly. Even though I respect that he tries different kind of stuff and has a strong story element to almost any of his horror stuff, is really strong stories. But I liked his ridiculous over-the-topness. It was perfect for Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Those scientists that first I hated them for like about 20 minutes, and then I was like, no, these are like crazy anime scientists. This is like exactly right.
I mean, the whole movie is crazy anime.
And then, then suddenly like Hellboy showed up as crazy guy and
kaiju collector.
Yeah, I think, but lacking him, I'm not sure if it'll have that insanity I need.
He's still alive.
Who's that?
Hannibal Chow.
Oh, yeah. He should for sure be in it.
He cut himself out of the kaiju at the
end. Yeah, at the very end, after credits.
Oh, that's right. That'd be for sure a fun thing to have in there without promoting that it's going to be in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to wait and see what they say on this one. After you guys go see it, you'll be my canaries in the coal mine.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go see this.
I'm going to go see it blind?
You're treating this like I'm treating Justice League.
Yep. You know, I'll be honest, you probably have better reason to go in blind to skip it than I do, I'll see what you guys say.
All right. That's all the news for this week. It was a big chunk of news.
Yes.
We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, November 11th, and...
a biggie week.
It's a big week. There's like, it goes all the way to the top of the shelf.
Yes.
And there's lots of graphic novels.
We could only fit maybe one more comic. Yep. And after that, we'd have to...
The store would detonate.
Yep. Sure. Yep. So I want to start off with Gotham City Garage, number one, which unfortunately we got short of it, so we only got about half our order, so we'll only have about a few copies this week and a lot more next week.
Gotham City Garage sounds like it's about a struggling rock band in the city where with the Joker running loose.
Instead, it is about cool chicks riding motorcycles in the post-apocalyptic wasteland of tomorrow.
Yeah, sort of a post-apocalyptic wasteland, almost a ruled by a 1% kind of Lex Luthor-y type.
So this is written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, who I don't know, and artist by Brian Ching, who is a guy I don't know, but who his stuff reminds me a lot of Sean Murphy and Raphael Albuquerque.
Yeah, I think it is
beautiful artwork.
And I think he probably did the cover, which is a great popping iconic type of cover.
No, the cover is in fact by Raphael Albuquerque.
Oh, okay. Anyway, it's a fantastic cover.
And this one's by Dan Panosian, so there's two of them.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Panosian is not super removed from his style though.
Anyway, this is all about there's this sort of this place called the Garden, which is the last city on Earth. It's like a necropolis. It's all enclosed. And they have some kind of like cyber tech in everybody's head to make them happy all the time. There's no unhappiness. There's no sickness, no bad thoughts, no pain ever. And it's the point of view of this woman named Kara Gordon. You might recognize both those names.
Yeah, but don't usually hear them together.
A world in which the sort of the Batman are these ruthless enforcers. And she very quickly finds out that there's more to her adopted father, James Gordon, and there's more to her, and winds up having to sort of crash outside of the Red Sun environment. You can probably guess where that's going. At which point she's being pursued by the, what do they call them? The gardeners, but they're actually just like Batman with guns and armored suits. And she is rescued by a team of bikers with Silver Banshee, Big Barda, Harley Quinn and Catwoman.
Oh, wow.
Ride up to save her.
I guess we should say the inspiration for this came from the same kind of unlikely source as DC's Bombshells line, a statue line.
This was a statue line of gorgeous, expensive statues of, like, custom motorcycles and...
Kind of like DC babes and their cool, futuristic motorcycles.
But what they did here is, it's really interesting world building. I love the art. I love the person who's running the, what do they call it? The Gotham City Garage. It's on the outskirts. It's like the...
is there, in fact, a literal Gotham City Garage?
There's actually a Gotham City Garage. Yeah. It's like their home base outside in the wastelands. Yeah. And the person who's running it is a great character to have there.
Yeah,
makes a lot of sense.
Cool.
And their lead, their Kara, is really good. I don't know where they're going to go with it, but it's a great setup. I'm always wary of these licensed things turning into, like, you know, if you can actually develop them. Like, I love the idea... and I was really excited when they were doing it, but I always assumed they're going to flub it. Like, that's going to drop the ball. No, this is a great first issue, and I'm definitely excited to see more of it.
You know, I haven't read it yet, but I listened to an interview with the guys about it, just a little short, like, 3-minute interview, I think, from DC, no less. But I liked what they said. The two writers on it, they pitched a good game, and it did not sound like guys. Well, it reminded me of, like, you know, back in the 80s, Marvel had licenses like Micronauts and ROM and G.I. Joe, mm-hmm. which could have been trash.
Yeah.
They could have been the most throwaway of throwaways. And instead, there's a reason people still venerate and remember those comics.
Right.
So, you know, DC's Bombshells, we've seen that make its mark and continue to kind of grow. And, you know, people, I was helping somebody coming in and looking for them just yesterday. I'm kind of impressed that they're taking a statue line, another one, and have invested a lot of thought and storytelling into it.
Well, and the other thing, just as with Bombshells, it's a woman-forward project.
Yep.
So, anyway, what's your pick, Dave?
My pick is the second issue of Marvel's Runaways relaunch.
Which you you came and informed me that it would be your pick and not mine before I'd even read it.
Yeah, well, I felt I needed to, since you'd probably have been a big baby about it if we had to fight again. you know, we really liked the first issue of this, and I thought the second one was another huge winner.
Yeah.
Once again, the spotlight is very strongly on the characters. And I felt like this, they were exactly right.
Yeah.
Not just a little bit right, but exactly right.
And that's really the key to Runaways, is that nobody's gotten these characters 100% right since Vaughn.
I also thought that they did a neat job of something that I saw actually done, I think, notably less successfully in another Marvel book this month, which is to kind of recap their history, but in such a way that it's not like those old Bronze Age comic recaps where a character would show up and there'd be two pages in sepia tones reminding you their whole history.
Yeah.
This one is characters talking about it and touching on, like, well, the Runaways had that side series where some of them got taken to Murder World, which was clearly a bit of a riff on, like, Hunger Games and
Battle Royale.
And I think one of them even says, it's like, well, you know, we don't need to tell her it's not that important. He's like, it was important. We were, like, trapped on Murder World, you know? Like, I like the acknowledgement that something like that does matter, but they don't tell you every single thing that the Runaways have been up to since. It's sort of a, with Gert revived now, it's kind of her catching up on things and being a little shocked at it. And there is a little bit of meta, I suppose, in the sense that she's kind of like, how could we have fallen apart like this?
Yeah.
That's kind of a, well, how could the license have fallen apart the way
it did? How could Marvel drop the ball the way they did?
But I thought it worked, too. There's sort of an underlying thesis that maybe she was the heart of the team, and when they lost her, they kind of lost their heart.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? That actually works really well. It works thematically.
It really does.
And I there's, for an issue that's kind of on the angsty side, there's some funny stuff and some touching stuff, too.
Yeah.
For instance, the assessment the agreed-upon assessment that Chase was the appendix of the team. They're like, no, you weren't the appendix of the team. He definitely was. And he's like, yeah, I was. And
there's also a great moment I don't want to spoil, but that I was like, oh, that was cool.
Yeah. Is it the, you're talking about the finale kind of stuff? Oh, interesting. I know what scene you're talking about.
Do.
Yeah. The art is excellent throughout it. The characters look like the characters.
Yep. And they're clearly working toward putting the team together, and they've thought about how to get these characters back together and what they're going to do and why they're doing this. And
I feel like if the writing were not so good on this, it's actually the kind of opening that I'm usually a little bit wary of, which is to say they aren't exactly in the hip deep in the action
or
storyline right now.
Yeah,
but everything feels so right that it's one of those. These kind of exceptions do happen all the time when the right writer does them.
Yep.
It's the right writer doing it. And that writer happens to be, in this case,
Rainbow Rowell.
Rainbow Rowell. Well, that's from, she's from Prose, right?
Yeah, she's a YA author.
Yeah. With Chris Anka on the art. Anyway, couldn't be happier with the way this series is going. If you liked the old Runaways, you must read it. I do think you probably would benefit from reading the original Ryan Vaughn run. That
everyone would benefit from reading the run.
But I think just jumping right into issues 1 and 2 of this, you could, but
it's not gonna have the same power.
It's not gonna have the same power.
Yeah, this is definitely for people who are
in a way it would be, this is a weird analogy, but it'd be like watching Empire Strikes Back first.
Yeah,
it's a powerful movie, and you're gonna probably have a great time. Or you're gonna enjoy it, but it's gonna mean so much more to you if you've seen Star Wars.
Yep.
So. Anyway.
So watch Star Wars, read Runaways, and then read the new Runaways.
Yes. That's exactly right.
And then watch Empire.
And then watch
Empire. Right. It has to be that exact order. If you screw up anything in that mix, you're going to die.
It's true. You'll be unhappy.
Nick, what is your pick of the week?
My pick is the third issue of the DC crossover Dark Knight's Metal.
Metal.
Yes. Said with all the metal that you can muster.
Randy, can we drop an audio cue of like a screaming guitar riff in there?
No.
Okay.
Everybody out there, in our hearts.
Imagine it.
No, but this is sort of following the pattern of like something like Grant Morrison's Final Crisis, where things just get darker and darker and darker.
That is what I love from my superhero comics.
But here's the thing: I say that, but it's dark in not sort of the overbearing way where I feel like players are being chumped out and heroes and
sometimes Grant Morrison himself does that.
Yeah, hope is still there, but this is all sort of about the villains winning in a lot of ways. As Barbatos, we finally get a glimpse of this evil bat entity, and it decidedly looks metal.
It does. It does. That looks like something from an like a Black Sabbath kind of album cover.
We see sort of Barbatos's evil Bruce Waynes as kind of riders of the apocalypse. But we also get some of the heroes banding together to sort of come up with a solution to the problem. Mm-hmm. Dr. Fate is sort of gathering a force of people that he's able to save, along with Mr. Terrific and Shayera Hall and... a few surprise guests that you kind of come out of left field that I liked a lot. There's a locale that I haven't seen in the DC universe in a while.
What is it?
I'm not going to tell you.
You know, one thing I have noticed from afar about this series, which I have not been following, is that it seems like its unpredictability is one of its qualities.
Yes.
But also the fact that each issue, like, very individually is also unpredictable, so you're like... any given page, you might flip and be like, oh, this cool person has showed up, or oh, I had no idea they were going this place, or right. Oh, that was a cool decapitation.
Yes. Actually, I can't recall any decapitations just yet.
I saw a claw or like a spike going through somebody in there, and I just kind of latched onto a decapitation.
There is that.
As symbolic of violence.
I also will say that this issue happens after the three, so far, one-shots of the different Batman. And I like how they incorporated each of those issues into the story. And also, sort of what we were saying about the Justice League trailer, that Dave, really liked the interplay between the characters. There's that same element here, where we see sort of Batman, or Superman, play off of Wonder Woman.
It's still Snyder writing, right?
Yeah, it's still Snyder writing.
He's, you know, this is a sort of an odd analogy, too, but... I would compare him to Bendis, not in specifics, but in the sense that neither of them are writers who like to use common tropes. They're always going to lens it in some sort of their own way.
Yeah.
So that, like, in a scene between Batman and Wonder Woman, it's not going to be the sort of the usual conversation you might expect. They're going to try and find something interesting to happen.
There's an homage to Flash and Superman doing their little race.
Mm-hmm.
There's all different kinds of homages to multiple stories from DC Universe. I just like it. I think Snyder is hitting all the notes that I want it to, specifically. There is a song in here that pays tribute to the 1966 Batman, which I thought was really cool. So I'm just really enjoying this series.
Do you feel like every issue is like a little kind of like crazy party?
Yeah. Pretty much. That's crazy metal party.
That's sort of the vibe I get.
You know, soundtrack by Black Sabbath, Def Leppard, all those other fun ones. My backup pick, not to stray too far away from the DC Universe, is Batman Detective Comics, number 966.
It picked a lot of the issues of this book.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great book. James Tynion...
And Detective is one of the ones that we're also most on board of the rebirth.
Yeah.
And... so I'm guessing, I'm just saying people should probably just go ahead and start picking up the trades. Well, if you take our word on anything at all.
If all three of us like a DC book, it's pretty notable.
Well, there's three trades out so far. There's a hardcover that's going to collect the first two coming in a couple of months, about a month or so.
Go ahead and hold out for the hardcover.
But the last issue started up a new story arc focusing all on Tim Drake with the odd stuff that's happening in Action Comics. Tim Drake is able to escape his prison from Oz and kind of go on the run. He is actually... apparently, Tim Drake is important because Oz was collecting different versions of him throughout the timeline. And he runs into an older version of himself that has sort of taken on the mantle of Batman.
How heavily tied into the big DC continuity events is this issue? Sounds pretty heavy.
There are moments.
Does he run into the better original version of himself that isn't from New 52?
Yeah, actually, it is from the pre-New 52 version.
Does that one but strike him and replace him?
No.
And can we have more of that?
No, this is actually a very dark take on the sort of what would have happened if events had continued on and Batman was killed. So it is sort of a darker version of Tim Drake.
Oh, good. Just what I wanted.
Yeah. However, it's...
Why would Batman be killed?
That's part of the mystery. There are things going on in this future. There's also callbacks to pre-New 52 stuff.
Weirdly, it was a car accident.
So we get sort of that Tim Drake's history while also them fighting Doomsday that is running around in Oz's lair.
Doomsday almost certainly going to play a role in Doomsday Clock.
I'm
sure. Is that what it's called? Doomsday Clock?
Yeah. Also, you know who else? The Clock King.
I bet he's going to show. Yeah. He's going to show. Pariah's going to show.
What if it's a mix of the Doomsday and the Clock King that is actually the villain at the heart of Doomsday Clock?
We can only hope.
The Doomsday Clock
Moloch
King.
And Doomsday and the Clock King will team
yes,
up.
Yes, yes.
But there's some cool stuff. Tynion, as always, does interesting things with the story. I feel like he portrays Tim Drake in two different ways that don't feel... completely out of character for him. So
portrays him in two different ways. You, oh, you're talking about the two different versions? Oh, yeah.
Both feel like Tim Drake, even though there are oddities.
How's the rest of the team doing in this one?
There is no other. This is
this
only
is a spotlight
focus.
Issue. Okay.
It's only the focus.
So there's no, like, Clayface and, what do you call it, Batwoman and all that?
Nope.
Oh, interesting.
And this has beautiful art by Eddie Barrows, who just...
he's been doing it, right?
Yeah.
Or one of the artists who's done it regularly?
He gets to throw in some painting effects and I really enjoy it.
So fancy.
Yeah, it's very fancy. So yeah, read Detective Comics. You will not be sad that you did. Dave, what is your backup pick?
Backup pick is a book that I think Randy and I have in one way, shape, or form recommended on I think every issue of the which is Star Trek The Next Generation Mirror Broken.
Yep.
This is issue number 4. This is the Mirror Universe Picard, who in the previous issue got out of the rut he was in, like trapped on like a crappy ship as the Empire, the his people in this case,
right?
When it was in decline, being wrecked by what are the Cardassians and the Klingons in an alliance.
Yep.
So he has managed to capture the flagship of the Empire, the Enterprise, and but in this we find things are not so simple as that. Once he gets on board, he still has to deal with the dissenters on the ship who are part of Jellicoe's crew,
mm-hmm.
and he has some dark plans for them,
yep.
which involve... I don't know if those characters were all... I felt like there's some guest stars on a prison station,
yeah.
that I felt like Picard knew, and it has to be from an episode. I just didn't know it off the top of my
yeah.
head.
Yeah, there's lots of references.
But it's a very entertaining scene, yep. whether you know him or not.
Yep.
Guinan's appearance in this messed up.
Yep.
I really enjoyed seeing it. I feel like you'll like this whether you love or hate Guinan.
That's what's kind of amazing. If you love Next Generation, you'll really like this. If you hate Next Generation, you'd probably also like
it. Yeah, you'll enjoy seeing it all subverted and perverted.
But I've been really enjoying this. There's also some great stuff with Wesley.
Yes. Picard's kind of plan to bring him on board is fun. I enjoy the because this is done in this sort of that painterly style, and they mm-hmm. really capture the likeness as well.
Yeah.
Whenever Picard is kind of smiling like this sly pirate that he really is more of in this, it's a lot of fun. He has lots of machinations, and then there's some other machinations going on in this case in this one. Some stuff with Riker and Troy. Is going on, and you know, I feel like at some point they should watch their background, Wes. I feel like at some point,
I agree,
there's going to be some serious backstabbing going on. There was also some fighting in this one, some ship to ship combat, and the Enterprise gets to strut her stuff. And it looks like, if I'm guessing right, they're setting up some serious combat in the next one as well. Yeah. That said, I think some of my favorite stuff was actually Barclay and Data just talking early on.
Yeah, that was fun.
And talking about Picard having sort of a... something even as dark as he is kind of in this one, a bit of a soft spot for misfit types.
Yeah.
Which sort of makes sense on a tactical level, a little bit like on the Discovery TV show for... what's his name? Who's the captain?
Lorca.
Lorca. He also seems to be kind of looking for... renegade and oddball thinkers and stuff for his battle. Yeah. Anyway, super fun to read and also cool and beautifully painted. So yeah, everybody should be reading it. You know, if you're a Star Trek fan.
Yep.
Randy,
I'd like to talk to you guys about Tom Taylor. I don't know if I've expressed
this,
but I'm a fan of Tom Taylor.
Who dis?
And one of the things that Tom Taylor has done is he takes concepts that sound terrible to me and writes them in such a way that I fall in love with them. That was true of Injustice, and that is true with this week's All New Wolverine number 25, where he brings back Daken, the sort of evil son of Logan,
yep,
who has a claim to being sort of the brother of Laura Kinney, the
X-23,
aka the new Wolverine.
Is it Daken or Daken? I thought it was Daken.
It might be Daken. I don't know. Right. Daken is the band.
But he's also Daken, just spelled differently.
Whatever. Anyway,
Daken sounds better though.
It opens with Daken Daken.
Yeah,
I'm gonna call them both now.
Sure.
He's in a bar in the middle of nowhere. He gets tagged by these operatives who take him down, and then Laura gets involved and has to go track him down because it looks like the people who took him might be the people who originally created her.
Yeah.
And. In the course of this, there's a couple big surprises. It ties back into her origins, and it's really good. I really liked what he did here. He has some more great stuff with Gabby, the young clone of X-23, who is sort of their Molly character from Runaways. She in this issue starts talking about how she wants a cool code name because Gabby does not inspire fear in the hearts of criminals. She has a cool little Wolverine hoodie costume that I really like. It's just a really good book, and this storyline that seems to go back into our sort of what is essentially her Weapon X is really good, and I'm curious to see where they go from here. So, more great stuff from All New Wolverine. People should be reading that book. Also in Legacy this week, Amazing Spider-Man number 789, which continues the fall of Peter Parker's Parker Industries. Definitely Parker back in his sort of down on his luck. But it also still continues what Slott's been doing as far as, like, he's in a relationship with Mockingbird, and he has now been the head of a corporation, and that changes things quite a bit. New Falcon number 1, Ms. Marvel 23, which is another great issue of this book. That's one of my favorite books. Daredevil 27, which is Daredevil running up against his protege Blindspot, and they've taken that in some interesting directions. Weapon X number 9, which continues the fight with Weapon H, the new Hulk-Wolverine mix. Wildstorm Michael Cray, which introduces the idea that some of the DC characters exist in the Wildstorm universe in different ways, which is a weird take, but it's interesting. Michael Cray is Deathblow. He's their sort of assassin, and this is all about him and, you know, him being recruited and being hired to take somebody out, and they want him to make a team, and he wants to work alone, and it's a good issue. It's a good spinoff from the Wildstorm series. Royal City number 6 starts a new story, which flashes back to 1992.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to read that this week, which is just how much there was in the week.
Yeah,
it's almost always one of my favorite books. So
it was really
good. I would always expect it to be.
Ben Templesmith's Wormwood Gentleman Corpse returns with Mr. Wormwood Goes to Washington. Baby Teeth number 5 is more of Donny Cates' tale of the Antichrist and the mom who gave birth to him. Mech Cadet U number 3. New Superman number 16, the long-awaited fourth volume of Rat Queens, Michael Chabon's Escapist, which is an old Brian Vaughn story. A lot
yeah,
of people
probably like
have not seen.
12, 15 years,
yeah,
it goes
sort of,
back.
It's sort of a meta story. It's drawn by Steve Rolston and Jason Alexander in two different styles, because one of them is a story of the Escapist, who's sort of a Golden Age superhero type, and the other is sort of a meta story about these kids who get the rights of this old character and decide to make a comic based on him and what it's like to be in the comic industry. So,
I think there's definitely a sense, not quite biographical, but definitely insider look from
it's
Vaughn.
It's informed by Vaughn.
At what it means to you know, the kind of heart and soul you got to put into making comics if you want to.
And last thing I want to mention is the long-awaited Overwatch Anthology hardcover, which collects a bunch of the digital comics, which are all pretty good. And I've been dying for some Overwatch comics, so I'm very excited to finally see that.
Randy, if I repeat any of the ones you said, let me know, because while you were blabbing, I was looking at the they do those William Shakespeare Star Wars books.
Yep.
They had a new one, and I wanted to find a passage to quote.
Sure.
So, and I did. First up, we've got Ragman, a six-issue series here from DC.
Yep.
He's always been a kind of obscure character, although I believe he has shown on, Arrow at this point, right? Anyway, I didn't get a chance to totally read this, but it looked interesting. It reminded me a bit of Moon Knight in his origins, in that he's overseas, and they in Israel with a team of kind of off the grid either mercenaries or soldiers, and they break into this tomb that has warnings and stuff on it, but they're just kind of looking for loot. And I think they sort of unleash the Ragman entity.
Okay.
It reminded me a bit of Moon Knight in the sense that they did come across as very much a mercenary guy who's dealing with PTSD after his experiences. And then, of course, also the strangeness that some of the things he's seeing may not be, in fact, hallucinations or whatever.
Yeah.
But actually the Ragman costume thing bonding with him.
So almost, this is a new Ragman.
Almost Spawn-like. Yes, okay. I think so. Huh. Although I thought he had the same name. I think it's more of a reinvention of the concept.
Okay,
all right. Let's see. Uncanny Avengers 28, which for those handful of people like me who are fans of the old Beast Wonder Man team, they get a major subplot in this one of hanging out and catching up on old times over drinks.
Yep.
There's
also a notable development with Human Torch.
All right.
There's a lot in that. I really liked that issue.
Second issue of Lazaretto, the college dorm quarantined for a virus and what happens afterwards. Haven't had a chance to read it. Looking forward to it. They got first issue of the new Falcon series.
Yeah, did you get a chance to read that?
Did not get a chance to read
that. I mentioned it, but I don't have as much to say.
Okay, yeah. No, I didn't have anything to say about it. I was looking up Star Wars stuff.
Yep.
Do we do this one?
Nope.
God Complex, new from Image. Paul Jenkins, you know him best for writing Wolverine Origins, but here is his story about what I gathered was sort of a cyberpunk story, but it's a world in which I think they said something like mythological gods power these things.
Yeah.
And so if you followed that or any of his other projects with, his mystery thing he did with Umberto Ramos and stuff, I figure you might want to check it out. And Family Trade, The Family Trade, new one from Image, from Justin Jordan, but I did not get a chance to read this, either of you guys?
Not getting a chance, but the art looks great. It's Nicky Ryan on art, and the art world looks pretty
cool. Oh, yeah, you know what? I did read a few pages of that, and it was one of the ones where I was like, oh, this is pretty interesting to me. I need to read the rest of this.
Yeah.
I didn't get around to it.
Yeah, it's about The Family Trade as being an assassin. It's about a young girl assassin.
Is it like in the future, or like...
It seems to be, yeah. It's definitely a...
And it's written by Justin Jordan, the guy who did Luther Strode.
Yeah.
And
right.
Yeah.
I feel like Luther Strode people should give the first issue a shot.
Right. And Luther Strode has a big giant hardcover collecting the whole story this week.
Yes, it does. It looks really nice.
It's Justin Jordan Tuesdays. Mighty Thor by Walt Simonson.
It comes finally out. Back in
a collection. This is, the legendary stuff that introduced Beta Ray Bill, that ultimately dropped the Don Blake identity for Thor, which had been part of the character for decades.
Yeah.
Lots of revisions that were all for the better. And lots of great storylines that, plus these, aside from having amazing Walt Simonson art, they now have coloring processes that are kind of up to modern standards, but still suit his art and don't oversaturate it with, super elaborate color schemes. They're all very fitting to his artwork. Lastly, I do want to mention The Force Doth Awaken. This is the seventh, I believe, of the William Shakespeare Star Wars.
Yep.
And I'm going to read you a brief passage here.
Yes.
You may remember this scene from the movie in which Finn runs into a big stormtrooper with a baton.
Yep.
And that stormtrooper says...
Traitor.
Traitor. Says it very loudly.
Yep.
Here he's a little more loquacious. Thou fobbing hedgeborn traitor, lout and scum... We once were friends and trained together, but now hast thou become a turncoat, drawn to the resistance and its errant ways. Prepare to meet thy doom, for naught exists as low as he who hath betrayed his friends. A.K.A. Traitor! looks like fun, as always. It's got BB-8 and a little Henry VIII hat on the feathered cap on the front. So
there's no way these should be as good as they are.
Yeah, they're nicely done. Nick, what else you got?
Just a few more to add. The third issue of Mr. Miracle continues to be as puzzling as it is. Just kind of, I'm kind of obsessed with some of the stuff going on. It's crazy, but I love Scott Free, and I love the relationship that Tom King is creating, or exploring between Mr. Miracle and Barda. The 989th issue of Action Comics, which
wow,
is
they're about to hit it.
I know. Just the third part of the Oz effect, as we see somebody from Superman's past return and run amok in his world. The first issue, or I guess the 287th issue of the Despicable Deadpool. It's the first part of the Marvel Legacy for this new book. And sees Wade kind of go back to his mercenary evil days as he fights Cable, which I thought it was a very good issue.
But Cable is his friend.
No more.
No!
Then X-Men Blue number 13, which is the second part of Mojo Worldwide. This story is great. I've liked Mojo in the past, but I like this come to Earth, separate the X-Men, throw them through their greatest hits, and that continues.
Yeah, I somehow missed this issue this week. I don't know how, because I love that first one.
But I really love the teams. I like the interplay with Prestige and the Young Cyclops. They had a great little back and forth. The art in here by Jorge Molina is fantastic. And then the second issue, which I haven't gotten a chance to read, of Scales and Scoundrels, the sort of fantasy all-ages book that came out a while ago, focusing on a young girl that may or may not be a dragon.
And the writer of Shirtless Bear Fighter.
And the writer of Shirtless Bear Fighter. So the art in here is beautiful as well. So that is all on my list. All
right. That'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until such time,
Yo, Joe.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.